Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We've all heard about the dangers lurking in classrooms, but what exactly happens when those dangers aren't just overlooked? They're quietly transferred. It's not our problem. It's now yours. Enjoy. Today, we're digging into the legal side of what's known as passing the trash, a broken system that allowed accused killer Andrew McGann to hop from one teaching job to the next, even after serious red flags. Joining me is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to help us break down how this keeps happening and why schools stay silent and what accountability could actually look like. I mean, Eric, let's just start here. When you hear the term passing the trash, I mean, from a legal and prosecutorial standpoint, what does it really mean?
What it means to me, Tony, is negligence. It means oversights. It means carelessness. It means permitting some known risk to continue to exist. And then, you know, sometimes when that risk escalates into an actual incident, you know, now everybody is sort of clamoring to look at it on the education side and say, oh, we should have done this and what have you. But there were preventative measures that could have been taken beforehand that weren't.
It's a lot of coulda, shoulda, woulda, but I really look back on it, like, did you really want to? Because it comes back to bad PR. It comes back to a bad image. It comes back to, we don't want to even pretend or acknowledge that this person might have worked here at one point in time. So on they go, or that we were aware of it. Let's just kind of start with the basics, because I think we need that. A lot of people go, well, there's mandatory reporting laws in place. Yes, yes, there are. What is the legal definition of mandatory reporting in the United States? Because that's across the board, mandatory reporting. It doesn't matter what state you're in context of K-12 schools. Who qualifies and what triggers it?
Essentially, mandatory reporting means that if you hold a designated position, such as a teacher, administrator, someone on school staff, and you reasonably suspect that there has been child abuse or neglect, you got to say something. You got to tell somebody. You know, there are multiple ways to report. Oftentimes it is to social services in that particular locale. Sometimes it's to law enforcement. But you have to say something, because if you don't, no one else is likely to find out about this. And the abuse or neglect that might be going on could get worse.
Very true. Let's take a look here. At the penalties that would exist, are supposed to exist anyway, for failing to report suspected abuse or grooming behavior.
Sure. So there can be disciplinary actions. Look, this is an obligation that these folks in the school system have. And it's not just the school system. There are therapist mandatory reporting requirements and in other contexts as well. And so if that obligation is violated, there can be sanctions such as suspensions, licensure, revocations, even sometimes terminations. That being said, it typically doesn't rise to the level of criminal liability, but there is certainly potential civil liability that can be imposed for someone who has not complied with these mandatory reporting requirements.
And that's an interesting thing, because what you have here is essentially two violations going on. If the action to which is being reported, and then the person, the reporters that are mandatory reporters, either not doing their job or doing their job within the confines of the institution's definition of reporting. So why are so many of these internal reports basically buried in HR and handled by school lawyers and not going directly to CPS and law enforcement? I thought, and I think the general thought from most of us, we don't explore this very often, was that, okay, if there's a report, that goes to CPS. And then from there, it goes to wherever CPS goes with it. But it doesn't just end up in some teaching administrator's office downtown at the administration office and then go to die. Are they following the law, I guess, is my question. When a school gets it, a teacher gets something that they are mandatorily reporting, and they report it back to the district, should it be going to the district, or should it be going to CPS immediately and simultaneously to the district? What is the breakdown here line of thinking on how to handle this?
Yeah, Tony, you highlight a really important issue in this context, because specific institutions, specific school districts, they have their own policies and procedures when it comes to mandatory reporting. And some would argue that those policies and procedures are designed to protect the institution, not the kiddo, not the potential victim who might be the subject of abuse or neglect. And so what happens far too often is that there is a report made, and so they're sort of going through the motions of reporting, but it remains within that institutional confine. And those institutions have an incentive to protect themselves, to try to eliminate any civil liability for the school district, for the school, for the administrators, that kind of thing. And so, you know, is there some incentive to sort of sweep things under the rug, to prevent it from becoming too public? You know, I thought reporting was supposed to be, let's make this public, let's make this known. But it seems like the policies and procedures work against that.
Well, at least make it known to authorities. I mean, the district administrator, whoever it is that gets the HR person, is not law enforcement. It's not anybody that's going to be able to take this and prosecute it or look at it deeper. They can evaluate it on the internal side. I mean, is this just, it should be more black and white, I guess. I would think if it's mandatory reporting, it's mandatory reporting to CPS. Now, CPS is already overworked. They don't have time to do their own job as it is to begin with, but you get it over to CPS and it's supposed to go from there, but it's not getting there in many areas. It seems to sit in this gray zone. Are schools being compliant if they're not reporting it over to CPS, if they're doing their internal investigation? And I get it, if an internal investigation finds that this is legit and is bad, it ends up over at CPS. But sometimes those internal investigations are very half-assed, or they're just, let me sit down with a teacher over coffee. Did this happen? No, they must be overreacting. Okay, great. That's the internal investigation. I'm not saying all districts do that, but we've seen a lot that do. So are the schools in violation of not reporting these things to CPS while they simultaneously launch their own internal investigation? Is that a fault? Is that breaking the law on their part?
You know, it depends in part on in which jurisdiction the school sits. You know, there is not some sort of federal law that applies uniformly that says, hey, if this happens, you have to report it to X, Y, and Z. It's not like that. And so it varies by jurisdiction. A good example in this Andrew McCann case is where he was an elementary school teacher, and there were some concerning statements that were allegedly made by the teacher that were overheard and that were reported. And we can go into those when you want.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that those were reported internally and there was an investigation, but there was no sort of CPS action taken, no social services action taken, and no criminal charges filed. And so when that happens, it remains within that little bubble of the institution. It's certainly inconsistent with the spirit of mandatory reporting laws. Whether it complies with the specific laws within that jurisdiction is sort of a disjointed analysis across across the country.
And that's the thing. It's always, well, does it rise to the level? Does it rise to the level of it being reported to CPS? I mean, I get it to a certain extent where, well, let's number one, make sure this thing is legit, which I think there are plenty of ways to do that without just relying on people's, you know, secondhand accounts of everything. Mandatory body cameras on teachers might be a lovely way to solve this problem, but that's not where we're at right now. So what would actually happen to a district legally if they failed to report something and that person, you know, went on to do something, you know, obviously within that district would be certainly a problem. But what about when they do this thing of, you know what, we've got these complaints. They're not necessarily up to the level of criminality that would likely be prosecutable, but it's icky. And we don't like it continuing here, so we're going to let you resign, and we'll give you your recommendation, because that seems to be what often happens so often. What could happen to those schools legally if that's how they handle it? Because that seems to be the trend.
So in my opinion, there could surely be massive civil liability for those schools. They could be on the hook for something that happens in the future because they had information and that presented at least a colorable risk of harm to a child. And they didn't take appropriate action, especially if they didn't comply with that state's mandatory reporting requirements. And then something happens later on. Well, that incident was foreseeable. And this institution should have taken further action to protect against it, or to at least have that information out there to try and mitigate the likelihood of this happening in the future. So, you know, in my opinion, those folks could be on the hook for millions of dollars when we're talking about a future essay on a child, or we're talking about a future violent action that was at least foreseeable and for which there were red flags, and those red flags were ignored. It sounds like that may have been what happened in this Andrew McCann case.
Let's talk about when people see something and people then say something, because they do. And there's a lot of people. The problem is not necessarily reporting, I think. It's more so what's done with that reporting. Now, do people hold these things in? Yes, they do. But there are we certainly are in a society where people seem a bit more vocal than they used to be. And they're not as ashamed to come out and say, hey, this happened. This needs some attention over here. What are the incentives, if any, for an institution legally, financial, reputationable, to avoid going and reporting this to the authorities? Just because it goes to CPS doesn't mean it's going to the local news outlet, which probably doesn't exist anymore. It's pretty much podcasters, because local papers, local radio is gone. So you don't necessarily have that. I mean, what are the incentives to not report this? It seems like it's a very steep mountain over here if you fail to do the right thing over here.
Certainly, you know, there are obviously optics issues. You know, look, if a school hired on somebody who is a threat, somebody who's a problem, somebody who potentially might abuse children or other people, that's a bad look for that school. You know, there's arguments that they should have engaged in better background checks. Perhaps they'll get less enrollment. Certainly, if it's a private institution, that could mean a financial loss substantially for that institution. And so on top of that, you know, just wanting to maintain a good name within the community is of value to these schools, of course. But they're really taking a gamble on this thing, because every now and again, something slips by and they try to keep it under wraps, and then that person hurts somebody else. And now all eyes are on those prior institutions. It's a gamble that's not worth it.
I guess my other question is, are districts not involving legal counsel enough to get an accurate answer of what they should be doing here? I mean, walk us through a likely scenario. A credible allegation is made, and instead of reporting it, the district lets the teacher resign. I mean, who's making this call? Is it like the superintendent, the school board, the principal? Is the legal counsel getting involved saying, hey, let's just let him resign and move away? Because it seems like a liability as well. If you're the attorney advising the school, this might not be the best idea. Are they shying away from legal advice, in your opinion, and going so by going more and like rolling the dice because our odds are nothing's going to happen. We've been doing this for a while and getting away with it. But, you know, you can only go down that road for so long before something, you know, comes back to roost.
Tony, you know, are there too few lawyers involved in these decisions or are there too many lawyers involved in these decisions? Yeah. That's a legitimate question. And I'm a lawyer. And what I can tell you is that, you know, the lawyers analyzing these determinations, you know, they're trying to look out for the best interests of their client. Hopefully they're identifying, like you said, a massive civil liability. And on top of that, hopefully they're advising on what the right thing to do is. But that's not always the case. You know, sometimes lawyers have been used to sweep things under the rug, to say, hey, you know, if you word things in such a way in the internal investigation, that can sidestep or appear to sidestep a further level of action that you need to take. And so, you know, here's how you do it. Let's just quietly try to resolve this, get this guy to resign. And if he's out of our school district, it's not a problem anymore.
I mean, there's sometimes contracts or sometimes settlement agreements that come into play here that explicitly prevent the district from discussing the situation with future employers. I mean, these are like self-imposed things that the district will put onto itself from a legal standpoint. Does that make sense? I mean, you're exactly right. Are there too many lawyers involved here? Where you also have the possibility, which has happened, where accusations are made, they are found to be not necessarily provable, but look, most of these accusations aren't very provable. But when you have a trend of them over and over from different people, it shows it might be something going on. But there are issues where accusations are made, nothing is found, doesn't get to CPS, they fire the employee, and they go back and they sue the district, saying, look, you never found anything, any proof of this, whether it's real or not. So they're also facing litigious action from both the employee that has the accusations against them if they're not true or just they're not provable. And then you also have the possibility of legal action against you should you let that person move on, or you're not allowed to say what happened to the next school district. Doesn't that like squarely put the district that's having the problems in a target for legal repercussions that are kind of self-imposed by their own doing, but also because they don't have much of a choice?
Certainly it's a legal quagmire, but hey, look, we're dealing with kids. These are sensitive issues. They're going to be hard, complex legal questions that arise. They still have to do the right thing. And look, if they're agreeing or entering into a settlement agreement with the employee, for example, and there's some kind of provision whereby the school side cannot discuss these allegations, perhaps because they weren't provable. That is absurd. We are silencing these school districts that know about information that other school districts might want to know about because it goes to protecting the children. And so, you know, them sort of silencing themselves and agreeing to these provisions whereby they cannot discuss the allegations, I think is antithetical to mandatory reporting requirements. It's antithetical to protecting children and transparency in the employment process when we're talking about teachers who deal with kids on a day-to-day basis.
And in a way, this is obviously we're talking about kids, so it's more sensitive than I guess just your average employment office type situation. But these sort of problems exist in other areas of life as well, other institutions. We see it in policing. We see it in many other areas, medicine as well, and just regular employment from different places. And in the last handful of years, you may have noticed, or some of our listeners may have noticed, that when you apply for a job elsewhere from your current employer, or you're looking to get a recommendation from your current employer, quite often the answer is, I can confirm your employment dates. And there's not a ton of, yes, we can say anything about you, good or bad. And a lot of companies have just adopted the, we're just going to do dates, not good or bad, that way. And it's insane, because if you're a great employee, you're just dated. And if you're a bad employee, you're just dated. It's not really an advantageous thing to a productive employee. But the same thing is going on here. Is there, can a future employer, are they even allowed to ask why the teacher left? Or is that protected? Does an answer have to be given? Of course they can ask, but does an answer have to be given? Or is that starting to fall into one of those categories of you can't ask that in a job interview?
You know, as a general rule, I don't believe an answer has to be given. I'm not aware of any legal requirement that the prior school would have to inform the new school about some kind of issues. Now, sometimes different jurisdictions and different school districts have their own idiosyncratic requirements in that locale. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, if school number two calls up school number one and wants information about the teacher, school number one is not under a legal obligation to give that. You know, should they be? Should there be some sort of provision whereby the prior school has to provide the employment file or disclose any sort of concerning information that could be reasonably calculated to pertain to abuse or neglect? You know, perhaps those requirements should be put in place, but I'm not aware of any across the country.
Is there also a reason here as well at play, do you think, that maybe schools don't want to ask that question? They're already starving for teachers. They basically need bodies in positions. So if you get somebody who has the degree, has the teaching certificate, it's not just a sub, it's somebody that they can put into this position and check that box that we have that filled. If they were to ask that question and find out something they don't like, maybe not necessarily something that would legally prevent the person from being hired, but more so, well, there was accusations, but they came out to be unfounded, and that's what it was, never got turned over, it was just, and they know nothing more. That still doesn't necessarily prohibit that person from being hired. There are unfounded allegations out there that are legitimately unfounded, that are just somebody saying something. But if they were to have knowledge of that, that at some point along the hiring process, there was a warning, unfounded warning or unsubstantiated warning, but a warning, does that in itself just open up the school to a whole other bunch of liability? Should that teacher turn out to be a monster and do something, and then the school is shown as having prior knowledge? So if we don't ask, we don't know. And if we don't know, you can't go after us for knowing something that we didn't already know.
You're exactly right. I think it touches on a very significant issue in our education system. You know, these schools are trying to balance a number of interests. Like you said, they've got to get warm bodies in there to teach these kids. There is a teacher shortage on the one hand. On the other hand, they've got to make sure they're making safe decisions for the children in their care. And so where do those lines kind of cross when we're talking about what information that the subsequent school is asking about? You know, surely, from a purely legalistic standpoint, it makes sense to not come into contact with information that's going to subject you to civil liability, to being sued if something happens. But you got to weigh that against sort of a more altruistic interest of needing to protect the children in your care. But it doesn't surprise me that schools would be shy about learning really the depths of all the information, you know, lest they come in contact with something colorably problematic, and then either they can't hire the person, or if they do, they're on the for a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't, but at the same time, trying to balance, obviously the interest is the children. You would hope it would be the children and their well-being. Is this whole thing a reflection of a system that is very, very broken in its way of handling things, where really, I mean, the school is in a conundrum. If you really look at it, they don't seem to have a real solid leg to stand on, because they're damned if they do, damned if they don't in many ways from a legal perspective. You're doing the right thing if you're reporting it, but at the same point, you could have repercussions come back at you from that teacher. There's no national database for teachers. There's no national database that says this person has a red flag or questions. I mean, there obviously is the S offender registry that's out there, but nothing for teachers. And an S offender registry doesn't cover just allegations. It doesn't cover allegations at all, actually. It covers things that have been convicted, where someone has actually violated the law. The law sees it that way. It went through the court system and it did it that. If there's found to be unfounded reports or accusations made and the person's found not guilty, guess what? They're not on the registry. So I get why you wouldn't just put every allegation up there on a registry. People lie. People make things up, especially you get to manipulative, more high school type years. You're going to have that sort of crap happening. That's why there needs to be more protections here in place. It seems not only for the districts, but the teachers themselves. So they're not put into the corner and someone says, this person said this to me, or this person took me over here. Why don't we have anything else like that in place in our country to prevent that? Again, I go back to body cams. The idea of a camera in a classroom, cool. I think they should have that too. But why not that? That seems to be like, if you're interacting with a student in any way, shape, or form on that job, have that thing on, period. I think that would solve it. And I think you'd get a lot of predators out just voluntarily leaving, knowing that they're going to be on camera. Why don't we have anything like that in place?
There is certainly gaining momentum for teachers wearing body cams and other types of objective measures like that that can document exactly what happened. Because like you said, there's a lot of he said, she said stuff going on. I've got good friends who are teachers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't want to be subject to some false allegation and then have that logged somewhere and be, blacklisted from ever getting a teaching job again, especially if it was unsubstantiated, especially if it didn't happen. And there are also privacy concerns. You know, I've talked to teachers who say, look, I didn't sign up to have a camera follow me around every day of my life and I'm at work. And so that's a legitimate question to talk about too. That being said, you know, we're talking about the safety of children. And sometimes when you're in an industry that has those sensitive issues where children need to be protected and are sometimes at risk, sometimes there's privacy that needs to be given up for that greater good. And that's why that idea of teachers wearing body cams is, I think, gaining support.
And I agree. I said it earlier when we were talking about the McGann case, where maybe, and people don't like this idea, like maybe some rights just do need to be given up. That if you truly want safety and change, you're just going to have to do it. Just like putting on a seatbelt prevents you from flying out the windshield should you collide with something. It restricts your freedom a bit, but you know what? A little bit in, you're like, oh, okay, this makes more sense. Why not? I mean, it just seems like this just might be part of the territory. Body cams are, with many departments, required for their officers. You know, at one point it wasn't either. So there was plenty of officers on a force that said, I don't want that. Well, tough shit. It's part of the job. It is what it is. It's to protect you. It's to protect them. If there's anybody who seems to have a problem with it, I question what your problem truly is. You know, is it just privacy? I mean, what are you doing that's so scarily private in that workday that you'd really not want someone else to see about it? That doesn't seem to add up very well when you're working with children. It's just kind of like you're going to work with kids. Guess what? You're going to be monitored. That's how it works. We don't have carte blanche like, I guess maybe we do, honestly. There is kind of carte blanche for a teacher to say, why don't you stay in with me over lunch this week during recess and we'll talk. And there's plenty of wonderful teachers who do that are helping children get ahead and do the right thing. But there's also many that don't have a camera. Problem solved. What is the responsibility here, though, of like state licensing boards and such in tracking disciplinary records of students, pulling certifications, things of that nature, should they see trends of misbehavior, of possibly predatory behavior towards a student, but they can't necessarily get it down to that legal sense? They don't have cameras. It's just a trend of accusations that are coming in from different students. I mean, what sort of authority do they have to do much if there isn't any sort of legal intervention from the local authorities if an accusation like that is made, or if it's left unfounded? Can they do anything? Can they put anything on that record?
You know, I think it varies by jurisdiction, and the schools have significant discretion when there is no substantiated claim of neglect or abuse. Another problem is that there's no uniform legal standard across the country for how the school should deal with this when these situations arise. You know, something, the way a school deals with it in Mississippi might be different than the way a school deals with it in California. And on top of that, like you said, there's no kind of legal database where if a teacher moves states, how is that new state going to learn about prior accusations, especially if they're not adequately recorded, not adequately reported, not adequately investigated? They're not. And we're going to have this issue continue to recur if we don't put measures in place to have that transparency of information and have it be available to receiving states for folks who have received allegations against them.
I know there's probably some teachers watching right now also going, yeah, but what about the union? Because that adds another legal layer to the onion that the school districts have to please. I mean, what role do those unions play? I mean, are they protecting bad actors under the guise of due process and tenure and all those fun things that seem to keep really bad actors in their place?
You know, it certainly depends on who you ask. If you ask the union folks,
yeah,
they're saying, hey, we're the champions of the teachers. We're protecting their privacy. We're protecting their legal rights. You're not going to, have somebody, their name be defamed and slandered for something they didn't do. We're going to go to bat for those folks. And that's all well and good. But what about when there is a credible accusation against a teacher? The union in those circumstances doesn't say, oh, well, we're going to cut that person free and you can do with them what you will. That's not how unions work. And that's not really the union's legal obligation. And so there is sort of this this infighting and this different interests sort of coming into play and butting heads against one another. And they're important interests on both sides. And so the legal system, I think, is still struggling to really adjudicate how those things happen and try to serve the best interests of everybody involved. You often can't do it.
I mean, more of a societal problem where we don't know what the hell to do with S offenders? Because, I mean, outside of school districts, I mean, it's very lax half the time in terms of what is prosecuted, how long the punishments are. It's just like, yeah, they're icky people, but we can't kill them. Some countries have just said that, like, let's just kill them. There's nothing that's going to work here. But it just seems to be like, unless something horrible happens and that is documented and proven, you can have somebody that has decades of complaints against them, but never quite proven because they know how to walk right up to that line without getting caught. And it just goes on and festers forever. I mean, is this a problem? I mean, and look, I get the role of unions. I'm not completely against them. I'm against them when they seem to have complete blinders on and believe that every person that's a part of their union is infallible, which really seems to be the case, unless that person is on camera SA-ing someone or there's provable evidence from an R kit that shows it. It's like, well, how would we have known? I don't know. Every school for the last 25 years and all the parents saying this guy's a creep around my kids, that might have been clue number one. How can we fix that?
You know, one thing that comes to mind is in like the 1910s, 1920s, early 20th century, oftentimes a person would be convicted of a crime in one state. They just moved to another state and there's no objective record. The new state wouldn't even know about their history. And then there were systems put in place, including what's called NCIC, which is a federal criminal database that logs both charges and convictions in other states. And so when the offender goes to a new state, the new state says, hey, wait a sec, in Arkansas, you did this same thing and were convicted 2 years ago. Now you're charged with it here. That's a problem. There is no such correlate in the education system. And so these new receiving states don't have that information. Maybe there should be some kind of database. You know, there is for police officers, at least in Colorado, where I practice, such that they can't, screw off in one jurisdiction and then go to a new one and have the new one not find out. There's this database that can be consulted. Perhaps we need something like that that would at least keep a record, because we're talking about children at risk of abuse or neglect.
Doesn't this feel like this should have been a decision that was figured out in like 1988 and not 2025, that we're like, hey, maybe we should protect our kids from potential predators, because this seems to be a trending problem for the last many decades. I think my thought, because I was kind of shocked to learn about just how loose and fast they play with these rules. And the Andrew McGann case is what brought that all up, a murder on a hiking trail. And then how did this guy get here? Oh, he's a teacher. Oh, holy crap, look at this trend. It didn't take long to find out the guy wasn't a lovely model citizen. But the school districts can only dig so far as well, and people start coming out of the woodwork when someone gets exposed. If we were to look at the future, and this is just, you know, hypothetical, if you were helping to write the model for the legislation on this to fix passing the trash, what's the first thing you would codify if they came to you? How would you begin trying to get this thing to an acceptable form for these systems to run effectively and efficiently?
You know, I personally think a good starting point that's very workable, that's very relatively easy to institute, would be a national database that logs accusations and, founded wrongdoing, that kind of thing. In Colorado, like I said, we had a problem with police officers where they'd be in some remote jurisdiction and they'd do something illegal or horrible, and then they would just move to a different jurisdiction. The new jurisdiction wouldn't always know about it. The new police department would hire them, and lo and behold, they're using excessive force again. So we implemented this statewide database that lists all the accusations and also the substantiated wrongdoing. And defense attorneys, in fact, have access to that information. What would be so hard about having a national database that has that? So such that every time there's an alleged incident, it's at least reported. There's an indication as to whether it was substantiated by evidence or not. It wouldn't necessarily put a scarlet letter on teachers who were wrongly accused, because it would show that the allegation was not substantiated. That would be a starting point, and it would be relatively easy. However, without the Federal Department of Education, the resource issue might come into play.
I guess the question there is, what does founded mean? Is this a founded complaint? As we're playing legal chess match back and forth of what about that? Because is it founded? And I get it. But how do you define that if it's never prosecuted, if there was nothing to prosecute? Is it number of complaints? You know, that would be certainly something. If I were looking at hiring a teacher, I'd be like, well, there's quite a few of these unfounded complaints. If there's like one, maybe, but I would think you'd almost be going for none. You might immediately hurt someone and their job prospects of getting that job if there's one and it's unfounded. That's not fair to that teacher. If they're a good teacher and it was just, you know, a shit kid or something that was accusing them of something that was absolutely not real, just, you know, in a vindictive way to hurt the teacher's reputation and whatnot. And I'm not thinking you're going to get a lot of that in elementary, but certainly in high school, that could happen. So how do we do that? What would founded be? What does that mean in a functional way where we can protect the good teachers while making sure the predators get caught and removed?
One way to think about it, Tony, is, look at the criminal law. The general rule across the country, there's a federal standard for a burden of proof that has to be met before a person can be convicted of a crime. That burden is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Sometimes there's gray areas and it's hard to determine, but that's the law. That's how it goes. What is stopping us from having some sort of federal standard on the abuse investigation side of these education institutions. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The one that's just lower than that is clear and convincing evidence. That's something more than 50%, but less than the highest standard, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I think that statutorily, legislatively, we could agree on a standard that makes sense, that would protect against false allegations because it's a high standard, but that would also bring some accountability and some transparency for folks who have accusations and especially repeated accusations.
Who's in charge then in the district of deeming it clear and consistent, clear and convincing evidence?
Clear and convincing.
Yeah, clear and convincing. Would require maybe probably some training on this, which is not out of the question. Or do you need someone that's just there, or someone within a police department within each community that is the head of this, that knows what to be looking for? Would this be something that could be implemented with existing administrators to handle that there and then move it up further if need be? But that seems to be the problem we're at right now, where there has been a lot of clear and convincing evidence. They just don't want the clear and convincing proof being shown back on their school name.
Oh, sure. And it's an important question. You know, do we have some kind of independent tribunal where we have an impartial arbiter who to whom this accusation is posed? We have arbitration throughout the country in like every industry there is, in construction, in manufacturing, and everything. And so, there are certainly some wrinkles that we'd have to iron out in terms of the logistics, but it's doable. Perhaps it is legal counsel associated with the school district or something to that effect, and perhaps the accused gets legal counsel. You know, this makes things more cumbersome, perhaps more expensive. But when we're talking about the high stakes interest of protecting children, sometimes you got to go there.
Yeah, you certainly do. And then once we have all the answers, like you and me always come up with all of the answers, we're going to fix the world someday, Eric. Then there's the money aspect of it. That's where everything falls apart. Oh, you got to pay for all that too. And that's where districts are like, we don't have enough money to buy cupcakes. So more or less legal counsel for all. So there's that problem. But I think it's a whole reworking. It's a whole reevaluation of the entire ecosystem. And I think, in my opinion, a greater acceptance that your teachers are fallible, because that seems to be the biggest thing. Everybody's infallible until they're not. And then they just disappear to another district and we pretend that they were never here. There's not a lot of, there's bad people and we're actively working to get rid of them. And we're actively working to protect your children. We take this stuff seriously. That seems to be like a much stronger message to parents today than just everything's wonderful, everything's great. What do you mean about Mr. So-and-so? We didn't have anybody that name. Oh, we quickly deleted it from our website the moment we realized that that was the guy that killed the people in the park. That's what we saw here. And I don't blame this district. They, again, based on what tools they had and the information that was available to them, they did not know this man's history, and they really couldn't have known this man's history without violating some privacy laws to get it. So that's where change seems to need to take place in a lot of areas for anything effective to come down. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always, thank you for your insight into this and the many cases that we cover.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.